listening to Severance by Andy Evans. Chapter 3, Here Comes the Judge. Isabel heard the rumble, and thanks to Cassius's warning, she was ready. The windows were all secured and the dust would not enter. All she needed to do was shut the door. But she was intent on watching to see the first signs of lightning or dust clouds. The mighty rumble she heard seemed to be gathering behind the mountain range. But this was not thunder. It was not accompanying a dust storm, and it was not gathering behind the mountains. It was moving, coming closer. It was the sound of hooves thundering across the field. What seemed like hundreds of hooves clattering across the moon's surface. This was not a sound Isabel expected to hear. No one on Severance was expecting this. From out of the night came a whole host of horsemen. Maybe she was mistaken. Maybe she was dreaming. But the thunder of the hoofbeats was soon joined by what seemed like a mini-dust storm. Isabel saw through the blueness of the night a party of around 50 men on horseback charging. She couldn't tell exactly how many there were, but Severance had never seen anything like this. This was a moon for ranchers, not cowboys. There were no cattle to be herded up. Severance cultivated agricultural produce, not beef. They never saw a gang of horsemen like this. Isabel strained to recognize any rider in the dim light, but she just couldn't. So she called her grandfather. Cassius emerged from the light of their home. "Grandfather, what's happening? Who are they? Where are they riding so fast?"
"Izzy, get inside and turn out the light. I don't want them looking towards the house."
"As you wish, Grandfather." Isabel extinguished the lights, but she need not have worried, as the horsemen were focused on one goal, reaching the town. Right now, the homestead was of little concern to them. In town, oblivious to the riders, the new arrivals had found their temporary homes supplied courtesy of the cooperative, and each was unpacking their belongings. In his modest apartment with its single bedroom, Amos Abercrombie was tucking into a meal. He was ravenous after his journey through the Black. As skilled as he was in the realms of scientific advancement, Amos was no traveler. His nerves always got the better of him when flying, and he'd learned that eating and flying were not sensible companions. So in order to avoid serious bouts of vomiting, Amos no longer ate before or even during a voyage. The only sustenance he allowed himself was in liquid form. But now, here he was on terra firma, his hunger had finally got the better of him, and he had to eat some solid food. Tomorrow he could inspect the contents of the cargo that had been brought from Osiris, ensuring that the equipment had coped with the buffeting it may have received during their journey. But now, tonight, Amos had to eat, and had to eat well. He was eating his third plate of food since his arrival. His suitcase lay open where it dropped, with clothing spilling out. Cases had only been opened to find food to cook up and a plate to eat off. He'd stopped for nothing else. It was always like this. Always. At his side lay a bottle of alcohol, another luxury he reserved for his arrival. He took a slug to wash down the mouthful of vegetables he was eating. And, finally, he had eaten his fill. He sat back in the single armchair in his apartment and closed his eyes. He drifted off to sleep. The FitzAlan family had been given a modest house with a couple of bedrooms. It had a sitting room and a dining area. Their cases had been delivered, and now Martha was unpacking the pots and pans, finding a home in the cupboards for each. They were told not to bring this sort of stuff with them, as pots and pans could be supplied cheaply on Severance. But not pans like these. These had been presents. They were wedding presents for both Daniel and Martha. She was not willing to leave cookware of such quality behind. She wanted her own items, not some cheaply produced wares that could potentially lack the ability to last like her own. Daniel had spent the evening attempting to bathe Jacob in a tin bathtub, but the little boy had done nothing but grumble and moan like crazy. Now he'd been sent off to bed. Tomorrow was Jacob's first day at school on Severance. It was also going to be the first day at work for both Daniel and Martha.
so tonight they needed to prepare themselves. With Jacob bathed and bedded, his parents were now focusing on their own preparations for the following day. The main street of the town was fairly quiet. As usual, few people were out and about. Evenings on Severance were not known for the vibrant nightlife. Here there was no crazy, sexually frustrated miner seeking the company of a whore. There were no liquored-up roughnecks who were roaming the streets looking for trouble. Here, decent law-abiding folks were preparing for another day, toiling manfully, scraping out a living. The saloon had shut up shop for the night. Most lights were ready to fade, awaiting the bright morning sun only a few hours away. But then came the cacophony. Horses pounding, yelps and whoops from the riders shattering this idyllic street scene. Nobody expected such an invasion. No one even knew these men were on the moon. They had no ID cards acknowledging citizenship. These men were not a part of Severance. These men were outside the law. They landed their own ship on the dark side of the moon. No one had been looking for them. No one expected them. As they stormed through the streets, their weapons drawn, they began shooting at the windows of any person who dared to look out to see who was in the street making such a row. A bullet smashed through the window of Jonah Callis, showering him with glass before planting itself firmly in his forehead. It killed him instantly and opened his skull at the rear as the bullet exited and continued until it found rest in the wooden dresser behind him. Daniel Fitzalan heard the calamitous roar and stampeding of the horses, but he thought better of looking out from behind the curtains of their new home. Instead, he and Martha ran into Jacob's room to find the little boy sat up in bed, looking alarmed, unable to make a sound. They looked across and saw glass strewn across the room, and splintered headboard inches away from the frozen Jacob. He'd sat up upon hearing the noise. The stray bullet had entered his room, missing him by the barest of fractions, but shocking him into stunned silence. Amos Abercrombie, on the other hand, was simply snoring away in his apartment, oblivious to the disruption, his needs and desires satiated. He would not hear that the riders were in town until the following day. The riders came to a halt outside the office of Sheriff Johansson. One rider, he seemed to be the leader, yelled out, "Johansson, get your ass out here, we got business." Sheriff Johansson stepped out onto the porch, carrying a shotgun flanked by two deputies. "I don't know who you are, but you have no business here on Severance." "Oh, I think we do. In fact, I know we do. See, we've been sent here on business by our employer." "How did you men arrive here? Where did all these horses come from? You are required by law to register with me for IDs." "Don't need an ID. Don't much want one. Like I said, we got business." "State your business, but be prepared to leave this moon." "We ain't leaving this Garam Rock until we leave, and there ain't nothing you or your toy soldiers gonna be able to do about it." A single shot rang out, and the first young deputy fell dead. The man atop his horse sat with a smoking gun in his hand. The speed alarmed Johansson almost as much as the merciless way in which he dispassionately dispatched the deputy without blinking. "Now you two had better lay down those guns of yours pretty quickly unless you want to end up buried alongside that kid. I won't kill you, neither will my men, if you and the good folk of Severance just cooperate with us. You are a cooperative, right?" He and his men laughed, sneering, sarcastic laughs, as they all aimed towards the sheriff and the deputy. Johansson decided that discretion was the better part of valor and laid down the weapons. "What do you want?" asked the sheriff. "You need to supply me with information. I'm looking for someone, and I've been led to believe they're living here on this rock. We're going to be searching for someone very specific, but my employers don't want me to alert the relevant party or parties." "What if we don't cooperate?" "Then you die, plain and simple. You're not essential to my work. If you get in the way, you get squashed like a bug on a windshield." "Who are you? At least tell me that." "We are the Stormbringers. We work for the man." You can call me Judge.
Judge? That's your name or your title?
Cross me and you can call me jury and executioner, too. Just ask that ex-deputy lying in a pool of his own piss and blood.
What information do you want?
I need to know the name of every inhabitant on this Goram colony. Somebody's hiding here. There's a bounty to be claimed. Don't much care how I get it. They can be dead or alive. Me, I prefer dead. Minimizes the risks in taking them back.
Let's go inside, and my boys here will entertain your deputy while we do.
If you harm any more of the folk here on Severance, I won't help you. I have a job, too. My job is to protect the citizens here.
Well, you realize you ain't exactly expendable, don't you?
Without me, you don't stand a chance of assessing the records. Even the deputies don't know how to access them.
They don't? You mean I have to keep you alive, else I ain't gonna be able to get into those records?
Johansson was just about to speak as another shot rang out, cutting him down, with a whisper of the words about to leave his lips left hanging in the night air.
Now then, deputy, was your former boss telling the truth? You don't know how to access these records?
Yes, the deputy stuttered.
So I really don't need you neither, then.
A third shot sent the deputy to his eternal rest.
Judge, another rider asked, if they's dead, what we gonna do now? How are we gonna get into the records and find the person we need to find?
I had me a contingency plan. I brought us an expert ready to help. He'll find us soon enough. In the meantime, you fellas fan out and find some place to stay. Anyone gives you any grief, kill 'em. We don't aim to leave behind anyone here who can identify us anyway. But for now, enjoy yourselves. Just stay sober and meet me here in the morning. Then we can all get started.
You've been listening to Severance by Andy Evans, Chapter 3, Here Comes the Judge. All music was provided by Magnatunes.com. You heard tracks by Claire Fitch from Ambient Cellist and Shira Carmen from her album Mistral. For further details, please visit Magnatunes.com. This program has been read by Andy Evans. Please stay tuned for Chapter 4 coming soon.